Instead of assuming five dimensions, Larsen assumed six, and properly labeled them as the three dimensions of space and the three dimensions of time. He assumed that there is a three-dimensional coordinate time analogous to our observed three-dimensional space. The result of this approach is that one can now calculate from the basic postulate of Larsen's theory any physical value within our physical universe, from subatomic to stellar. This I.N. sought-after unified field theory is different because we are not accustomed to thinking of time as being dimensionally analogous to space. We have thought of time as one-dimensional, as a stream moving in one direction. Yet once you get the hang of it, coordinate time is mathematically a more comfortable concept with which to deal. Professor Frank Meyer, of the Department of Physics at the University of Wisconsin, presently distributes a quarterly newsletter 3 to scientists interested in Larsen's new theory, which explores perplexing questions in physical theory using Larsen's approach. I was interested in testing Larsen's theory and made extensive calculations using his postulate. I became convinced that his theory is indeed a workable unified field theory. If you are personally interested in checking this theory for yourself, I recommend obtaining his work and checking it as I did. For I had been pondering several interesting statements communicated through contactees by the alleged UFO source prior to discovering Larsen's work in the early 60s. Although the people who had received these communications knew nothing of the problems of modern physics, they were getting information which apparently was quite central to physical theory. First, they suggested that the problem with our science was that it did not recognize enough dimensions. Second, they stated that light does not move, light is. Larsen's theory posits six dimensions instead of the customary four, and finds the pure field, which Einstein believed would represent matter, to move outward from all points in space at unit velocity, or the velocity of light. Photons are created due to a vibratory displacement in space-time. The fabric of the field. Furthermore, the contactees were saying that consciousness creates vibration, this vibration being light. The vibratory displacements of space-time in Larsen's theory are the first physical manifestation, which is the photon or light. According to the UFO contacts, the UFOs lowered their vibrations in order to enter our skies. The entire physical universe postulated by Larsen is dependent on the rate of vibration and quantized rotations of the pure field of space-time. The contactees were suggesting that time is not what we think it is. Larsen suggests the same thing. The UFOs were said to move in time as we move in space. This would be entirely normal in Larsen's time-space portion of the universe. Lastly, and perhaps most importantly, the contactees were receiving the message that the creation is simple, or one thing. Larsen's theory is a mathematical statement of this unity. The New Science Advocates is a group of scientists and philosophers currently promoting Larsen's theory. In a recent news release, they had this to say about Larsen's reciprocal system of theory: no previous theory comes anywhere near being a general theory in the true sense of the term. None of them is applicable to more than a relatively small part of physical science, and none is derived entirely from premises of a general nature. Everyone finds it necessary to make many assumptions specifically applicable to its restricted field of coverage. A theory of atomic structure makes assumptions about matter and about its basic forms. A theory of electrical phenomena makes assumptions about electricity and electric charges. A theory of quasars makes assumptions about quasars and about the radiation through which these objects make themselves known, and so on. Furthermore, all of these theories make use of a host of additional assumptions of a more general character that are embodied in the basic laws and principles of physics. But now we have a theory that makes no assumptions at all, other than those contained in the fundamental postulates as to the properties of space and time which define the theory. All conclusions, including those with respect to the basic physical laws and principles, are derived solely by deduction from those postulates, without invoking the aid of any supplementary or subsidiary assumptions, and without introducing anything from experience. In our opinion, This totally unprecedented accomplishment is sufficient in itself to justify the most serious and painstaking study of the new theoretical structure. 5. An interesting extension of Larson's work is a conjecture which I have entertained that a more informed society might index events spatially rather than temporally. When his talks with Puharich about time, it would seem that they do this, for they say that a certain event was planned hundreds of light years ago. The metal-bending children when Yuri Geller performs on TV, mentally bending metal and fixing clocks, there are often many kids who try to duplicate Yuri's tricks. Sometimes the kids succeed. The number of children that can cause bends and breaks in metals and other materials just by wanting the break or bend to occur is increasing daily. John Taylor, professor of mathematics at King's College, reports in his excellent book, Superminds, on the extensive tests run in England on several of these gifted children. What physicists have never before considered worth investigating is now increasing at a very rapid rate. Action at a distance, apparently as a result of some type of mental activity, seems repeatedly the observed effect. If the Gellerizing children continue to increase in numbers and ability, the 1980s will see such fantasies of TV as My Favorite Martian, I Dream of Jeannie, and Bewitched becoming a part of reality. So far, most of the ability shown by these children is in the area of bending and breaking materials. But there is some indication that they, like Geller and Matthew Manning, will develop other abilities as well. With controlled, repeatable experiments like those conducted by Taylor and by the Stanford Research Institute in the United States, we begin to have good, solid data available for study. Gradually we are moving into a position from which we can begin to create a science of magic, for that which has been called magic through the ages is now being performed at an ever-increasing rate, primarily by children. In the future, we may even find this magic added to the curriculum of the sciences at universities. In point of fact, the present disciplines of chemistry, physics, etc., are still basically magic to us, since we are still in the position of having no ultimate explanation of causality. Age regression hypnosis. During the past 20 years I have done several hundred age regressions, working with subjects from various walks of life. With very few exceptions, I have discovered that a reasonably good hypnotic subject can be helped to remember experiences which occurred before his or her birth date into this present life. The large majority of these people remember lives which occurred prior to this life but identifiable as being in the recent historical past. I have had people who are in this life quite ignorant of a certain foreign language, who under hypnosis, while re-experiencing moments of a previous life, are able to speak that foreign tongue. While there is no way to prove the theory of reincarnation, it is interesting to note that many researchers besides myself have reported many thousands of instances of these hypnotic regressions to previous lives. As one examines the mass of data which these regressions provide, one cannot help but note that the theory of reincarnation is a more substantively satisfactory explanation than some alternate theories, which attempt to be conservative and scientifically safe. Such latter explanations of the day two of a good age regression case take each confirmed fact gained in the hypnotic session and say, the subject could conceivably have known this another way. The subject could be using telepathy. The subject could be clairvoyant. The explanations offered in this way strike me rather as an instance of going around Robin Hood's barn, when there is a broad and well-trodden path right through the forest. I say well-trodden, because 3/4 of the world's population ascribe to religions which include reincarnation within their structure of religious beliefs. Mediumship. The medium, a person who is able to act as a link with discarnate entities, is probably the most controversial of the common psychic types. I consider a good working knowledge of mediumship and its pitfalls essential to the study of alleged telepathic UFO contactees. As I have stated, there seem to be many planes or densities of existence, therefore it is not always possible to be sure of the source of a telepathic contact. A person visiting a medium for the purpose of communication with discarnate Uncle Herman may actually contact a residual portion of Uncle Herman's consciousness, another entity claiming to be Uncle Herman, or in many cases the subconscious of the medium. I am certain that many mediums and UFO contactees never intend fraud, and do not themselves realize the fraudulent nature of what they telepathically receive. The dedicated researcher will attempt to achieve an attitude of unbiased discrimination, listening to everything with suspended disbelief, yet reserving final judgment until his data is ponderous in quantity and correlations are extensive. Magic, real magic, not prestidigitation. W.E. Butler defines magic as the art of effecting changes in consciousness at will. 6. Generally, events are thought of as magical if they defy all rational or scientific attempts to explain them. As a consequence, as our scientific philosophy has expanded, our inclination to view natural events as magical has shrunk. We no longer consider thunderstorms to be of magical significance, because we know the physical mechanics which create the thunderstorm. That is, we think we do. What we have really done with thunderstorms is to find our way back to the more basic puzzle of electrostatics. Born into this world, we wake up in our crib and very slowly become aware of our surroundings. As long as these conditions of existence, remain the same, we are satisfied to call our environment normal, reserving the label of paranormal for that which is contrary to the great body of our experience. That is, as long as we drop a stone and it continues to fall rather than float in air, we will accept that as the natural event and see a floating in air object that looks as though it should fall as supernatural. It is a difficult thing to do, but try to imagine for a minute a state of total lack of experience with this world. Try to look at it as if for the first time. Without labeling them, look at the people, the animals, the birds and insects, at foliage and sky. Feel the wonder creeping in. Now, in your mind, back off from the surface of the planet Earth and see it as a totality, a ball in space with a thin cloak of swirling air around it. You and the billions of others who live on Earth stand on its surface, the soles of your feet pointing inward, towards the center of the ball, your heads pointing outward, towards space. As you hold this in your mind, perhaps magic seems not so limited on our normal world. I believe that in truth, we have only a tiny sliver of understanding of reality, if indeed we have any at all. When a child stares at a spoon and it curls up, or breaks, we somehow find this more amazing than the magic of our daily experience. Perhaps these magical new events are clues to the real nature of man. The mechanisms of real magic motion in our physical world is usually the result of a potential energy such as gravitational, chemical, or electrical. The magician also works with potential energies, within consciousness, in order to create motion or displacement in mind. The magician works with potentials in consciousness similar to the physical activity of storing electrical charges in a battery. Just as a battery has a positive and a negative pole, so does consciousness. Many call this positive-negative polarity good and evil. There is ample evidence that it is possible to create a large potential through the manipulation of consciousness, whether it is done by intentional magical manipulation or by political rhetoric or religious exhortation. I would suggest that consciousness is more fundamental than physical matter. I find it hard to see even the possibility of physical matter creating consciousness. The magician, then, is working with the more fundamental of energy fields, to attain a more fundamental objective. The objective of the magician is to obtain predictive and manipulative control of consciousness. The white magician clearly defines for himself the limits of this manipulation of consciousness. His objective is the development of his own consciousness. The black magician is less careful about what consciousness he wishes to be able to manipulate, and thus becomes interested in the evil aspects of control over others' consciousness. The white magician wants to develop his consciousness, for he knows that it is the only thing he will be able to carry with him through the physical death. His attitude towards this physical life is that its one purpose is to provide him with the catalytic effects of physical experience for use in the development of his thinking. He sees himself as a micro-consciousness dwelling within macro-consciousness, and attempts to consciously unite himself with all that there is, so that the microcosm is one with the macrocosm. To put it another way, he is attempting to achieve realization of union with his creator. The key to this attempt is control of consciousness. The more closely the magician approaches this goal of realized oneness with the creation, the more able he is to do seemingly magical things. He is tuning his mind to that of the creator, and thereby displaying some of the abilities of creation. The black magician has the reciprocal orientation in that he is attempting to achieve separation in mind rather than unification. He glorifies his own individuality and gains power by separating himself from all of creation and then declaring himself its master. Both white and black magical attitudes and practices are able to build high potentials in the field of consciousness, quite analogous to the creating of potential difference in electrical fields with positive and negative charges. Once a sufficient charge of consciousness has been stored, it may be used to create motion or change in consciousness, which in turn affects the physical world for what we call good or evil. Because the essence of man is his consciousness, the true nature of man is perforce magical. All men have infinite potential to create whatever changes they may desire. But at present, man on earth seems lacking in the knowledge of his true nature and the abilities of his mind. Most men fluctuate as a matter of daily habits between slightly good and slightly evil, building up a slight potential in one direction and discharging it, then swinging back a bit the other way. This puts him down in a potential well of thought. Since he is not polarizing steadily in either direction, he can do no magic. Though sufficiently polarized, like Jesus the Christ, perform this magic with no difficulty. Everyone does have the innate ability to do such magic. The beginning of the Gospel according to John in the Holy Bible contains this statement. The true light that enlightens every man was coming into the world. To all who received him, who believed in his name, he gave power to become children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. 7 I am not in any way suggesting that the unity with God, or Creator, or the Christ, is only valid when approached through the doctrines of any particular religion, but the concept is clearly stated here. When Jesus told his disciples, "These things and more shall you do," he intended that those who heard those words polarized their consciousness until they regained the natural abilities which we presently call miraculous. Many of the UFO sources indicate that they feel that man on Earth has trouble recognizing in many instances the difference between positive and negative thought, and for that reason is vacillating between the two. There are lots of people who have heard about or read a little of the UFO contactee literature, who dismiss it as being a series of ridiculous fantasies, like the French peasants reporting stones falling from the sky. If a handful of people reported contact instead of thousands, and if the communications they reported varied widely in content instead of matching, then there would be a much poorer case for UFO contact. I have worked with teenagers who had no previous background at all in UFO research or literature who, after a very short training period, were able to receive, in a telepathic manner, hours of communications of the exact type reported by UFO contactees. Comparison of this information with information obtained by other widely separated contactee sources over the past 20 years always results in the same conclusion, that the basic message content, no matter where or who the receiver was, is the same. Earlier I spoke of the UFO contactee picture as a kind of puzzle, and a fairly big one at that. Some of the pieces of this puzzle seem silly or even crazy when one first picks them up, but carefully pieced together, these contactee stories begin to form a recognizable pattern of UFO motive. I think this pattern is not easily recognized or understood for the same reason that jellarized spoons are hard to accept. There is very little previous experience on which to base an analysis. But that the pattern exists is hard to deny. As ufologist Brad Stager puts it, "For the past 3 years I have been conducting a serious study of certain contactees, whom I call flying saucer missionaries, and I have noted that a certain percentage of the information dispensed in their cosmic sermonettes has contained a good deal of accurate information and that certain predictions have been realized. In my opinion, many UFO researchers, and nearly all news media and orthodox scientists, have been too hasty in their assessments that the contactees' messages are just so much nonsense and science fiction-inspired pseudo-religious prattle. Although several of the contactees seem to parrot in a tedious manner a great amount of the same basic message, there may be important clues hidden for us in their fanciful distortions if only we were to work a bit harder to separate the cosmic wheat from the celestial chaff. Eight and longtime researcher, Professor J. H. Bruening of the University of Mississippi, has this to say about a UFO phenomena, after studying it closely for 30 years. UFO phenomena is a contrived paranormal event created for the benefit of the viewer with a specific stimulus content. This phenomena is a show-and-tell device precisely geared to the culture to which it is presented. Note that all historical UFO sightings are always just slightly advanced for the viewers of the time. Medieval sightings were of a fully rigged sailing ship sailing along in the sky. The 1897 sightings looked like a Victorian science fiction book illustration, and the crews were all reported as being dressed properly for 1890. Current sightings are spaceships with astronauts as pilots dressed in space suits. Obviously, neither a sailing ship fully rigged nor a Jules Verne ship could possibly travel through interplanetary space in those forms from another planet to the Earth and back. They all were here in physical form to be sure and were reported as such, but they did not get here in that form by flying here. This display is intentional and is a part of a controlled program of cultural diffusion of special forms of information into current Earth civilizations. The information is, however, in coded form. It is not obvious at all but is mixed in with considerable noise. Not to be melodramatic, but Toynbee has amply demonstrated that cultural advancement periodically is based on the productivity of a small number of creative people who are able to pick the signal out of the noise and come up with new conceptual patterns as described by Sorokin and Grober. It would appear that the last quarter of this century is such a time, and perhaps there. Invisible College may be that group who can decode the signal and thereby extract the key information. I hope they can do this before the Russians do it. The coded data in fact contains considerable information in the fields of technology, culture, philosophy, religion and sociology. To paraphrase McLuhan, the phenomena is the message. The whole pattern must be considered as a total thing and not examined in a Spencerian fashion. If a piecemeal approach is used, the total pattern will be lost with a resulting loss of information. The rest of the model of the UFO phenomena's meaning is built around the proposals put forward as early as 1947 by the discussants in the Mark Probert group in California. I keep coming back to these ideas because they simply do in fact explain details of the UFO phenomena. See The Coming of the Guardians, Seance Reports and Transcripts 1945-1960, Round Robin 19501960. Vista, Carr, The Borderland Science Research Association. This model is also found scattered around in a large part of published UFO data, especially in contactee reports, most of which seem to be true. The ones I have investigated do have a ring of truth about them. Now, the extraterrestrial intelligence, 8, model, which is an extrapolation of our civilization, fails to account for either paranormal phenomena or for the reported engineering designs. While the continuous violation of the known laws of physics and aerodynamics eliminates the simple mechanical model of UFOs, the obvious limitations imposed on the use of a space vehicle of a mechanical sort by the sheer distance between solar systems again excludes the Jet Orion-driven spaceship as a possible model. The model that does appear to fit the data is, incredibly enough, the one which is constructed around the concept of a multi-dimensional universe which contains technically advanced civilizations, some of which have reached the capability of multi-dimensional travel. This travel is a space-time phenomenon where a change of frequency is equivalent to an instant change in location, that is, they dematerialize there and materialize here. Once here, the ship or vehicle operates as a physical object in our dimension. It can violate the laws of physics by partially dematerializing. Its physical appearance is determined by its mission, not by any engineering demands, and the crew may appear either as themselves or as manifesting a contrived appearance, again depending on the mission. It would appear that what is considered as a change in frequency is that matter comprising other dimensions varies from our matter in that the distance from the electron shells to the nucleus is much lesser than here. In a sense, their matter is more dense than our matter is, so they expand their matter in order to materialize here and must hold it in this abnormal state in order to remain here. To return to their place, they relax their energy field and immediately return. This difference in matter allows our mutual dimensions to normally coexist without interference, except in some rare cases where a sort of splashover takes place during which people and objects may appear or disappear suddenly. The general cultural impact of the UFO phenomena through its persistent and deliberate performances has been to create a knowledge revolution of a dramatic sort in the general population. This gives the creative minority a really favorable social climate in which to work. In a sense, the phenomena have created a demand for new ideas, now someone has to come up with them. I have worked these ideas out in considerable detail, and the more the concept is expanded, the more it fits. You know, the real problem in theory construction is timidity. We are all too often reluctant to move boldly into new domains and thus are unable to come to grips with intellectually explosive phenomena. 9. What I am saying, then, is that the UFO phenomena are forming a pattern, the heart of which is a structure of being and thinking, or a philosophy, which can begin now to be put together. The contactee messages especially gives important clues toward the construction of this philosophy. These cosmic sermonettes, as Steiger terms them, do yield a harvest. There is cosmic wheat among the celestial chaff. Chapter 4, The Nature of Man. Few of the many thousands of communications allegedly from UFOs which are available to the researching scientist are acceptable on face value to him. The reason for this is that the scientists have not formulated a general theory which can contain the contactee information. The scientist is not being particularly stringent or hard-nosed in this exclusion of data. This data simply does not compute. Some scientists reject the data as being unworthy of their attention. Other, more interested researchers look rather longingly at the more dramatic aspects of the UFO-related evidence and declare themselves ready to forge ahead until the new understanding is reached. In his excellent consideration of the metal bending and other unusual talents of Uri Geller and the children who are currently demonstrating the Geller-type abilities, Professor Taylor says, part of the job of looking at the world through the eyes of a trained scientist is to look for ways of improving our current scientific models of the world. 1. Hopefully, this is the thrust of this investigation as well. This chapter will begin the presentation of a theory of reality formulated as a result of long study of UFO and paranormal phenomena. The theory is still speculative, rather than conclusively proven. However, I believe the time has come for it to be presented for consideration by researchers and by the general public, because familiarity with the theory offers an entry into the myriad of UFO phenomena and contacts which seems to make sense. The real nature of man. Imagine yourself encased in a heavy rubber suit and the cumbersome diver's apparatus, with the big bell face mask on your shoulders. You are carefully and with some difficulty walking about on the ocean floor. The suit, and the relative difficulty of movement within it, is a fair representation of the physical body in which we are encased and with which we usually identify ourselves. The body that animates this awkward physical body may be called, as St. Paul did, the spiritual body, or, as some occultists do, the astral body. It has not been proven to exist in a certain known manner. No one yet has ascertained the precise composition of the astral body, yet there is enormous weight of common belief in it, stretching back to the Egyptian belief in the ka. Ghosts and apparitions throughout history have appeared as witnesses to the reality of this body. In their well-researched book, Muldoon and Carrington treat rather carefully the whole array of astral projection data that also lends credence to the assertion that there is an astral body. 2. And Curlian photography is catching a luminescence around the physical body that, according to some clairvoyants, comes not from the physical but from the astral body. We look, they say, something like an eclipse of the sun by the moon, the luminous astral body. 3. This astral body which all of us have, then, is the double of our physical body and in fact acts as the electrodynamic, or bioplasmic, mold from which is created that configuration of chemicals that manifests as our physical body. This finer body leaves the heavy material body at the time of death and is related to the spirit or soul. This again is not scientifically proven, but there is a great deal of descriptive evidence to indicate the truth of the statement.